and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. And I love you too. So, this is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia, and it's made possible by listeners like you in partnership with George's Food Truck, Kauai Store, and a lot of others that we'll be hearing a little bit later.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Chef George of the Jungle Food Truck, now in Wailua at Kamokila Hawaiian Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef George of the Jungle supports KKCR.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products, including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Kauai Civil Defense siren tests are scheduled from September 22nd to the 24th. The 9 newly installed Civil Defense outdoor warning sirens will be tested. Tests will be conducted from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the following locations: Wailua House Lots Park, Wailua Golf Course, Hanama'ulu Beach Park, Puhi, Koloa Town, Poipu Beach Park, Halavili Road, Kalawai Park, Kekaha next to the Chinese Cemetery. Area residents may hear the siren sound for 6 to 8 times during the 30-second to 1-minute intervals. The testing will also include short blasts, known as burps.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And on that note of the shofar, I will say that today is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement in the Hebrew calendar. I'm not Jewish, but my joke is that I'm Jewish, like half of my siblings and so many of my friends are, so I'm always aware of that.
I'm hesitating because I do not know, is it Happy Yom Kippur or...
Well, the Day of Atonement is probably one of the most serious days of the year, so it is kind of where, you know, you ask for forgiveness. So, I ask anybody that I have hurt for forgiveness. It's actually a solemn day. Rosh Hashanah, that was last week, that is a happy day. That's the new year. So,
okay.
Anyway, so... that shofar that begins this show, that is something that Carlos Dutro, the original person from Kauai Soapbox, started, and I have always kept that there. And it's like, it's a call to action. It's a call to action.
What's the action today, Felicia?
Okay, well...
Where's it at? What's happening?
The action today is gonna be largely a call-in show. There's things happening here... around the islands, all over the place. And so I kind of know that some people will be calling in, but we're going to be talking about everything from local to global, and we'll bring that up. I do want to start off with some really good news.
All right.
And my friend Jim Hawkins, a.k.a. Hawk, who was missing since yesterday morning, I swung by his house on the way here, and guess what? He's found, and he's fine.
Good.
And yay for dogs and trucks.
Yay for dogs and trucks.
Yeah, and at least there was dogs and trucks there, and there he was, a little bit disheveled, but he's fine.
Great.
So, yay, dogs and trucks. So he's good. So I'm happy about that. And I want to also begin the show with letting people know about two events that are happening this evening. There's, you know, probably more. I mean, I know there's more, but two that I have in front of me. One is Dr. Ashley Lukens from the Center for Food Safety. She is speaking at Hanama'ulu. That's at the King Kamuali'i School in the cafeteria. They tend to have a strong focus on, like they say, food safety. So in a short piece, that would be people who are concerned about pesticides and genetically modified food, but other kinds of foods too. Last night they were at Waimea, and I didn't hear how that went, but she might call in later the show, so we'll know about that. And so at 6 o'clock, King Kamuali'i, and then also at 6 o'clock today, Apollo Kauai is having their continuing discussion about managing Kauai's environmental future relative to climate change. And so it's a panel discussion. I'd actually like to go to this one. I'd like to go to the other one, too. I like to go to everything, though. The Mokihana Festival is going on. Lots of things are going on. There's so many good things. It's a good problem when there's too many good things to do. But the headline is LNG, which is liquid natural gas, and Kauai's energy future. And so it's going to have a panel discussion by Jeff Mikulina. He's from the Blue Planet Foundation. Joe Boivin, he's from Hawaii Gas. Mina Marita, our own Mina Marita from Hanalei here, she does energy blogging, and she was with the Public Utilities Commission. She was the head of that, so she knows a lot about that. And then Brad Rockwell from KIUC, he's their lead engineer. A little bit of a rock star in terms about knowing what our energy cooperative does. Jonathan Jay will be there, and he will be recording it, and it will be on the KKCR audio archives, so people can hear that. So those are two events that are happening this evening. And so we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, but I do want to again read a piece of KKCR's mission statement. Sometimes people, I always appreciate feedback, including the ones that give me a hard time for talking about challenges that people are having.
You get a hard time?
Oh, yeah, you know, sometimes. I got some people who know how to do that. And I can take it just fine. But it says, KKCR is Kauai's independent, non-commercial, listener-supported community radio station. And I'm not going to go through the whole piece, but the last line of it says, KKCR provides a forum for overlooked, suppressed, or underrepresented voices in music. And the Kekahu Foundation is who facilitates this broadcasting opportunity. And we, you know, that's what we do is, I mean, we can do the very well represented that is there by commercial media.
Right.
But those aren't the people who tend to call us and talk to us.
Right.
So when they do, they're certainly welcome.
What is the Kekahu Foundation all about?
Butch Kekahu was a Hawaiian activist. He has passed. He has passed away, but he is, you know, he was a very vocal person for Hawaiian rights and to be able to really support them. So a lot of things have happened on Hawaii Island. One thing that happened this week, and we might get some calls in from over there, but and Mauna Kea, they made an agreement, the protectors of the mountains, the people who've been up there protesting or protecting, however you want to look at it. They met with the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and they agreed to not sleep there overnight in exchange for the Department of Land and Natural Resources making the commitment that they will let them know if the TMT people decide to go and build so they can be back up there on the job stopping that. But every day during the daytime, they are still up there.
Mm-hmm. So then they've all got to be housed each night.
They have been able to be housed. I mean, they go home at night.
Okay, there's some people from other islands, right?
There are some people from other islands, but mostly it's a core group that live over there on Hawaii Island.
Okay.
And another thing that's been really good is the Office of Hawaiian Affairs has made a real effort to... it was actually rare. They made a little video, and they made a statement where they're taking a supportive role behind the protectors of the mountain and the people who are really calling attention to, you know, hey, the agreements made with the Hawaiian people are consistently broken, and our cultural practices are being suppressed. And you know, I'm paraphrasing for sure, but they're basically saying you're right. And so that's kind of a big step. And if there's an Akamai listener who wants to call in and correct me on that, they certainly can. Or they could add to it. You know, there might be some different way of looking at that. Then also over on Hawaii Island, they had something called the National Association of State Department of Agriculture meetings over there. And a lot was put out there, and I'm kind of pulling up in front of me some of these. I've got their website up. They had 20 different, very significant policies that they worked on there. It was a closed-door meeting, though some of the people who have been fighting this issue showed up, and they were pretty persistent, and they were allowed in, and they sat and they watched, and so I've seen a number of the videos.
So the issue you're talking about right now is what?
Agriculture. So when you have the National Association of State Departments of Ag, that means people from all over the country are bringing their directors in for their agriculture departments, and so there was a number of sponsors at different levels, though the diamond sponsors, the $30,000 a position sponsors, happened to be Big Ag and kind of the big five that are over here: Monsanto, Syngenta, Pioneer, Dow, BASF. It says Bayer, but it's kind of the same. And I think actually Dow was a $20,000 sponsor, but they were the biggest sponsors. And when you look at the speaker list, it was really heavy supporting that perspective. I paid attention to especially Marjorie Bronster. She is the attorney who represented the industry in the county, the suits against the county. So, you know, I mean, she's an attorney. It's her job to sit there and spin it. But I winced as I watched. I would have played some excerpts out of it, but the audio was from in the middle of the crowd, so it's not strong enough to really come across on the radio. But what was clearly stated there, that was she goes, oh, you know, all these counties, they attacked the industry, and we had to work to keep the counties from attacking it. And that's a really interesting way to spin it. If I was making that statement, I would say the counties responded to the people's demands for protection.
Right, yeah.
And so on the clips where I did listen, I cringed a bit because it seemed that pretty much the dialogue was absolutely the foundation is that there is nothing to be afraid of in any of what's been going on, and it's just ridiculous that people are concerned. She did say something, though, that was really meaningful to me. She pointed out that in Hawaii there are only 4 counties. And we don't even really, for the most part, have city governments. You know, Oahu is the city and county of Honolulu. And so there's 4 entities to work with. But in some states, there's 50 or more counties. You know, a lot of them have like 20 counties, and then there's all kinds of municipal governments. So that there is really a big push to not want the localities, the municipalities, to be able to say what they're doing, because if they do that, then it, you know, then each state would have a whole lot to sit there and work with. You know, they'd go, okay, we can do it in this county, but you can't in that county, and it brings up a lot of the issues that are very key to even what's in the national election. And that's, you know, you'll hear some of the more conservative or right-wing talk about states' rights, and I actually support that. I like to go, the more grassroots, the better everywhere. And they'll say they're constitutionalists, but when the Constitution was written, there weren't, you know, almost 400 million people here. And so it was written really differently. But later in the program, we can kind of look at that a bit, like what happens with all these regulatory industries. The challenge is that even just as I'm like trying to prepare for this show, and I've been looking at it for a few days, there's a lot of detail that happens in each of these. And they I'm half expecting somebody to call who was at that meeting. So if you're listening, do call in. They had 20 policy amendments, and so these are changes to permanent policy, and they had action items too. So these have, you know, a real diverse portfolio of State Department of Agriculture responsibilities, you know, from child nutrition to antimicrobial resistance to environmental protection. So, you know, it takes a lot for the citizen to be able to be conscious and aware of what all is happening. But this was basically a closed-door session, and these are national decisions that get made. And the regulators, they're not elected. Regulators are appointed. And so we have, you know, many issues that fall under that. So I know that there were some people from Kauai that made it over, and it rained just buckets during their effort there. And so I think at some level it did rain on their parade.
Right. But somebody may call in who is there, yeah?
Yeah. Somebody said that they wanted to call in and talk about what they observed there. So another thing that did happen, though, this past week, the Hawaii Farmers Union United, which in Hawaii, the Farmers Union is actually older than the Farm Bureau. There is an American Farm Bureau and there's an American Farmers Union. And our Hawaii version, and even our Kauai person, our good friend Annabelle Bella Broke. She's probably going to come in here on another show and talk about what they did there. But they went to Washington, D.C. this week. And they had dialogues with the top dogs in the U.S. Department of Agriculture and really did emphasize the importance of what we call regenerative farming or resilient farming, ones that aren't reliant on chemicals.
That's great. Do you know what she was asking for specifically, if anything?
Well, I've posted it, and I put her elements up here. I have to kind of pull it back up. But
anyway, she just missed the Pope in Washington.
Oh, is he there yet?
He arrived there today.
I think she's still there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
What did the Pope do there? Did you see that? You watch the news. I don't really watch the news.
Well, the Obamas went out to Andrews Air Force Base to greet his plane, which was very nice of them. And so far, he's just been sort of adored from a distance. He's going to have a big gathering on the South Lawn. But the big deal is he's going to address a joint session of Congress. That'll be a first.
When is that going to happen? I want to watch it. Is it on C-SPAN or anything like that? I bet it is.
I'm sure it'll be on C-SPAN, yeah. You know what? I tried to actually take note of that. It must be tomorrow because then he's got to get on his way to New York.
I know when he is in New York, he's going to talk to the UN.
Yeah. Oh, Philadelphia, then New York. Yeah, he's going to talk to the UN. But, I can't wait for that address. It's going to be just like a State of the Union, right? Everybody there and just the packed house. To see their reaction, really, because he's going to take some stands that are not uncontroversial. And we'll have to see how people, what their official reaction is to the kinds of things he puts out.
Huh. I did watch the Stephen Colbert show. He's got a new show that's taken over for the Late Show, and he had the UN director on there, and he was talking about having the Pope. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia.
Hi.
Hi, this is Sharon from Kona.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Hi, I'd like to share a little bit about what happened at the Sheraton Kona Resort and Spa.
Okay. Because that was, you went to the event, right? The Association of, the National Association of State Department of Agriculture?
Yes, I did, with two other representatives, and there were a few organic farmers in there, but I didn't really recognize too many of the other people. The head of each department from each state was seated around the room.
So of each state, all 50 states showed up?
Yes, I think so.
And so how many days of it did you attend?
Just that one day, but it was quite a full day. We stayed for the morning sessions. It was quite unbelievable. Several people mentioned protesters, but I think they weren't expecting a small white-haired lady to come and crash their party. So it went quite smoothly.
So
when we were entering, there were people looking at us, and there was some. I could tell that they were wondering who we were. But so we went in and sat down and listened to two speakers. There was a representative from Coca-Cola who got up with a slideshow, and he was just telling us all the wonders of Coca-Cola, never mentioning GMO or anything else, of course. It was shocking to see that. So after, when Marjorie got up and she did her speech, which you've very nicely covered for us right there. I think he did a good job on that. And she, so right at the end of the speech, two of us got up and unfurled the banner and stood up to the right side of the room. And everyone was looking. A few people were taking pictures. And three local bouncers came to escort us. But they let us sit right back in our seats, and we developed a friendship with them that allowed us later in the day, when these people were exiting five giant buses at the palace in Kona, they let us go right up to the door, and we had signs with pictures of babies with birth defects,
gastrocentesis. So when you said you had the banner, is that the Shame on You Syngenta sign?
That was the one that we opened up in the session. And then we also had that down in Kona Town. Later in the day at 5, they were due to come and have a dinner party on the lawn of the palace, which is sacred ground, so we didn't understand that. But we were able to have these giant posters. I don't know if I should mention names, but all the Kona crew, want to thank all of them for their fearlessness and endurance. We had that banner and posters. We recruited people off the streets to help us. So as they went in, it began to rain and rain and rain, torrential rain like I've never, ever seen in Kona before. And the wind blew their tents, and it was pouring into their food. And several of us were standing against the wall chanting Ole GMO, Ole TMT, and so on. You can picture us just standing there in the rain, laughing and having a great time. And one of the bouncers said to me, "You're so happy." And I said, "That's because I get to do what I love, which is to protect the children and the planet."
So when you were listening to the dialogue inside, did you learn something? Was it, did it, I saw the list of speakers and it did seem that it was particularly heavy on people who are dominant in this whole agriculture scene. So we have to give fairness to that. I mean, most of the agriculture in the United States, if you go by percentage of acreage, probably really does go to these big industry. But what was the dialogue like when they were talking? I heard Marjorie's. I heard a few little clips of others that seemed very, anti-people who were concerned. They were, putting people down that were concerned. But did you hear any of the opposite voice?
No, not at all. Although I did get to speak to the representative from Connecticut, and I was able to give him the new Pesticides in Paradise book. I also offered one to, help me here.
Scott Enright, the Department of Ag guy? He's the Department of Ag for Hawaii. When you were listening to the speaking, did you learn anything? Was it, for me, what I heard that I really pulled out that was good was this challenge that is across the country if they have fields that are in one county right next to another or one town right next to another, you know, why they have a reason to want to have it be at the state level and not the local governance level. Did you hear anything that was strong and meaningful for you?
Not really. The one thing that was quite shocking is that they were trying that day behind closed doors to change the status of the monarch butterfly from endangered to non-endangered.
No.
Yes.
That's kind of amazing.
I don't know how we find out what the outcomes of their decision-making were, but I know.
Because if I understand correctly, that monarch butterfly has dropped by over 90% in about 30 years, and it's because the milkweed that is essential for it to eat when it's a baby is killed by the spraying. Is that correct?
That's my understanding also. We know that glyphosate kills everything, so I would say that. Correct, but after hearing that, I just I've been posting all kinds of scientific studies on butterflies to express what you're also expressing. We know the bees and butterflies are in danger, but they that sums it up. The attitude is kind of unbelievable. Like they really.
So what's the motivation for them to delist it?
Well, I think the motivation is pretty clear. If it's delisted, then if it's listed, then they have to take extra steps to protect it. If it's delisted, then they don't. You know, it limits their limits.
What would those steps be?
Well, they would be able to use more pesticides in those areas, and I do want to encourage us all to get some Hawaiian milkweed and share the seeds around so we can get that going. But
yes.
Their objective is just control from the top to the bottom, every aspect of our food, and then all the water gets involved too. And
okay, well, I know that you're involved with the people who are the protectors of Mauna Kea. How's the mood over there? Is it good?
Yes, it is. I think so far the people are just staying during the day, and I don't know why DLNR had to go. There were 20, my understanding was there were 20
officers
that went in the middle of the night to remove the tent.
I saw the filming of that. I mean, and it was in the dumping rain, so there was an awful lot of officers up there, but they probably were scheduled to go up and do another arrest. So the protectors had left. They had been given notice to be gone by 6. I think they left by 7. and nobody had come up. But I think that they did come in the middle of the night, and they probably had expected to find them sleeping. So that's probably the main reason why they came late.
Well, that's way too many. We don't need that many. But may I just really quickly close with, at the palace that evening of the dinner?
Yes.
All of those people were left there. The buses had gone somewhere else. And the water rose all the way to the seawall. If any of you have ever been in Kona, right down on a little drive near the pier, the water rose all the way to the top of the seawall and the street became one with the ocean. And I've never seen that anywhere before. And the wind and the thunder, yes, I think Akua was not pleased.
It was about 4 feet deep of water right there on Ali'i Drive. I did see it, and the interesting thing was is that wasn't the tail of a hurricane or anything like that. It was apparently the normal weather pattern.
Which we'd never had before.
Yeah, it wasn't a big storm.
Right. Well, I'll let you carry on with your wonderful show. Thank you for letting me share. Kapu aloha, everyone.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia with Marshall, and we're doing Kauai Soapbox, and today is particularly a call-in show at 826-7771. It looks like we have another caller, and aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. Kona checking in. Just wanted to say thank you to the Kauai GMO Reaper for coming down to help us welcome the conference attendees and educate them a little bit about the health department not collecting birth defect data for 10 years, and to let them know we're not happy with them for the unbalanced conference that they attended.
Did they respond?
No.
Did
I
they?
Think was they had there... already been told, don't respond, don't look at us. Earlier in the day, so I just wanted to say thanks to the Reaper for coming down.
Okay, yes, we know the Reaper from here from Kauai, so thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. And we have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, this is Ashley Lukens calling from the Center for Food Safety.
Oh, hello, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
Good. So you had an event last night, and you're having one tonight. Can you give us a little bit of a rundown of what the content is?
Sure, you bet. Last night we were at the Waimea Neighborhood Center, and tonight we're going to be at King Kaumualii Elementary School.
In Hanama'ulu. Uh-huh.
Yes, and we are presenting the key findings of our pesticide report, which we published back in May of 2015. And what the pesticide report covers is sort of two broad swaths of information. One is the available data on genetic engineering and pesticide use in the state of Hawaii. And then the second is it's a comprehensive review of the medical literature on the health impact of pesticide exposure. And some of the things that we learned in conducting this report are things like, one, Hawaii hosts more GE field test sites than any other state in the nation. California, for example, hosted 172 field tests last year, whereas Hawaii hosted 1,141 field tests. And so the report examines sort of what kinds of crops are being field tested here in our state and how that might be associated with pesticide use. For example, we learned a vast majority of field tests are for corn and soy, upwards of 92%. And these crops are being genetically engineered for herbicide resistance. So they're creating more herbicide tolerant varieties, which means that these plants will be more tolerant to the pesticides that many community members across this island are concerned their families are being exposed to. We also looked a little bit at the available pesticide data, and we found, you know, that we're suspecting there's about 17 times more pesticides being sprayed here on field-tested corn varieties than on corn varieties on the continent, in sort of Midwestern states. So we do know that there's a high volume of pesticide use, and this is, again, just based on the data that's available that these companies report both to the state of Hawaii Department of Agriculture and the USDA through their field test registration program.
So how is their good neighbor policy working? Are they pretty diligent? I haven't looked recently. For a while they were putting it out every month. Is that continuing to be published, the pesticide use by the different companies?
Yeah, you know, we check on the website on a monthly basis, and eventually the information ends up there. The problem with a voluntary program, however, like the Good Neighbor Program, is there's no means of enforcement and reassurance that the data that's reported is actually accurate. And if it wasn't accurate, there's no recourse. It's a voluntary program. I mean, I think a lot of people in other states have found that for transparency to work, it needs to be mandated and overseen by the government, because they are the unique institution that can ensure that the information that's given to the public is actually accurate. Additionally, I think there are some aspects of the Good Neighbor Program that are voluntary. For example, notifications over phone and email if pesticides are going to be applied within the proximity of your home or in an area that you register to. And there's a question as to whether there has been sufficient outreach into the communities that could potentially be impacted for them to understand how they can access this information. But no other island in our state has the privilege of the information that the people here on Kauai have through the Good Neighbor Program. And I know that in order to write our pesticide report, this information was absolutely critical to really understanding the pesticidal practices associated with the field testing of GE corn and soy. And so while it's not sufficient, and while I think it needs to be differently administered, it's, again, a critical piece of information.
Are you familiar with our joint fact-finding group that's over here that's, you know, came in the wake of our Ordinance 960 that was the disclosure piece? We have a group called the Joint Fact-Finding Committee.
Yeah, I've participated in a few of their meetings, and I know the folks that are heading it up, Peter Adler, et cetera.
Because I was wondering if you were involved in that, so it sounds like you have spoken with that, and do you have any level of confidence that that is going to bring something about that will help to have something mandatory at the state level? And did you go to the same National Association of State Department of Agriculture that the other people were just talking about that happened in Kona?
Okay, a lot of questions.
Two questions, sorry. Yeah.
Do I trust the joint fact-finding process? Generally, as a methodology to bring forward information, yes, I think joint fact-finding is an important part, but it can't be evaluated in a vacuum. A lot of people that are directly impacted by pesticide drift have no time to waste when they're thinking about the health impacts that their keiki or kupuna might be experiencing because of chronic low-level exposure to pesticides. So, yes, I think it's important, but in a situation where we're seeing this kind of potential toxicological impact, I don't think we should wait to regulate pesticides while we're waiting for information to come to the table. I also think the team that's heading up the joint fact-finding is a great team, and so I have a lot of faith in them to kind of dig things up. I think we're going to have to see, but I don't think it's the responsibility of the community to prove to the government that pesticides are dangerous. I think it's the burden of agrochemical companies who are applying high volumes of restricted use pesticides on our islands on a near daily basis to prove to us that those practices are safe. So I don't want the burden of proof to be shifted onto the community. That's not fair, and we've seen from countless examples across the world that this is the way that companies tend to mire government in sort of information gathering processes of a variety of methodologies, of which joint fact-finding is just one. So they mire government in that so they can continue doing what they're doing without being regulated. And nobody has time to waste. Because if you look at the medical literature, the literature is clear. Pesticides are dangerous. They're not sufficiently regulated. Pesticides do drift. And we need to make sure here in our state that we're mitigating any risk, particularly for our future generations, because they are the most vulnerable population.
Did you put any focus on this National Association of State Department of Agriculture? Did you look at any of what they have on their agenda or who is supporting it?
Yeah, I did. I did. I actually was able to speak a little bit with Chad Blair at the Civil Beat when he covered the kind of lopsided sponsorship lineup. And, you know, I think what I said to Chad and what I'll say again is I think, you know, across our state, communities are really concerned about the relationship between industry and government. And they see that there's a revolving door. They see that there's a continual alignment of our Department of Agriculture with the industry's priorities. And they're not really seeing the kind of advocacy that they would want to see on behalf of their public servants for the protection of public health over and above industry profit. So the NASDA conference lineup did nothing to assuage those concerns. And in fact, for example, when Marjorie Bronster went and gave a panel session about, you know, the local attempts to regulate agrochemical operations, there was no invitation extended to the attorneys here in our state that are actually fighting to protect people's rights to public health and safety, whether that would be Earth Justice or the Center for Food Safety's own legal team.
Right. That's a really excellent example because they picked the legal team, they picked the lawyer for the companies suing the counties, and they did not invite the lawyers like Earth Justice or Center for Food Safety that are protecting the counties from, and really it's protecting the people of the counties. I would say that every action that was won in Maui County, Kauai County, and Hawaii County was hard earned. It's not like the council said, hey, let's do this, and capitulated easily. In Maui, they had, an incredible amount to get that ballot initiative on there. And here in Kauai, we spent close to a year going to meetings, spending the night in the rain, et cetera, et cetera. It was a very, very difficult thing. It wasn't like that the government just said, hey, you know, let's take on Big Ag. The people said, hey, government, take on Big Ag, you know. So I felt that she really did a disservice to how she framed that.
Yeah, and I mean, generally, I think one of the things that Hawaii is teaching the nation, those communities that are also organizing for greater transparency around genetic engineering and pesticides, what we're teaching them is that we need to have a multi-pronged strategy. We can't just organize our communities to fight for good policy, but we also need a really great litigation strategy, one that can assert and protect our right to regulate these things. I mean, we learned in Jackson County, for example, that their GMO ban stood up, and it stood up because their state constitution has different language around whether or not counties have the capacity to regulate agriculture. I do think that our counties under the Police Powers Act have that authority, and I do think that that's what we're going to see at the Court of Appeals. But we do need that multi-pronged strategy. We need better policy. We need lawyers to defend it. We need communities organizing and constantly holding our public officials accountable. And we need people to run for office. I mean, everybody knows what their allies in office have been able to do for them as their advocates. Imagine if we had more. Imagine if those folks weren't siloed, if they weren't singled out, if they weren't, you know, chased out of office by millions of dollars, of which these chemical companies are putting into our electoral system at the same time. So, you know, I think we need a multi-pronged strategy, and I think that's one thing that we've got here that other communities might not have, and so I think we just need to keep fortifying each of those.
Well, Ashley Lukens, for the listener who might have just tuned in, this is Dr. Ashley Lukens from the Center for Food Safety, who's over here and will be speaking tonight at Hana Maulu at 6 o'clock at King Kamualii. Ashley, how was the event last night? Was it well attended?
There was about 50 people that came, and you know, for me, this is the first of a statewide tour that we're doing, sharing our pesticide report findings with
communities,
with smaller community groups, and really walking them through the data. And this was the first presentation that was very well attended by the industry and by those folks that are organizing to regulate the industry. I do think that there was some sense of a dialogue between the two sides. It did get a little heated. But, you know, I think that this is an older conversation here on your island that I'm stepping into as a new face and a new voice. And some of those older arguments needed to be aired so that people could be assured that I understood where they were coming from. But some of the things that we were able to kind of set aside is, one, why is there only a focus on large companies as opposed to all pesticide users? And I think the sense is that the way that regulation rolls out is that you have to regulate the most dangerous, the highest volumes first. We really feel like any user that uses above a certain threshold of restricted use pesticides, those pesticides classified by the EPA as the most toxic, should be regulated first. You know, the industry said, well, why don't we regulate home users? Well, because a lot of the pesticides that these agrochemical companies are using are actually banned in home use. So we want to make sure, again, that we're regulating the most dangerous, the most toxic first. And absolutely, we support more comprehensive pesticide regulation over time, but that's not the way that regulations roll out. Sometimes you have to start with the largest class of users.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that some of the industry was there. There was an event maybe a month or two ago, Lauren Pang, Stephanie Seneff, and I'm forgetting the other woman's name, really wonderful person who came from Australia.
Judy Carman,
yeah. And they did a great job. But what I was pleased to see, I counted at least 15 people from the industry coming and listening. And I think that that is really good, because it's been a few years that it's really only the people who are opposed showing up at the meetings that say the stuff is bad, and mostly only the people who work for it showing up at the meetings that say it's good. And I used to joke, because I bring in both teams, more from the anti side than from the pro side, because it's hard to get the pro side to come in here. But, you know, they make it sound like it's totally safe to brush your teeth with it, or it's the end of humanity. And, you know, can they both be right? You know, I mean, it can sound that bad. And I am really glad that there was both groups listening to the science and what was being said at a thing at the Performing Arts Center. And KKCR did put that out live. And, you know, it takes persistence for us to all learn and figure out what's going on. And right now it seems like the industry is very resistive of wanting to have any kind of regulation on them. But we appreciate that the Center for Food Safety actually moved over here to help us. Because without an organization like Earth Justice or the Center for Food Safety, it is near impossible for the miscellaneous people. I mean, when you see thousands, literally, and in an island that our size, 70,000, we had over 4,000. Some people are saying 5,000. It seems like a stretch to me, but at one of our marches and the other one, I know that was over 2,000. To get that percentage of population to go out and walk in the dumping rain and the blazing sun with their strollers and wheelchairs and dogs and everything, it is not trivial. And I know that people have donated and been able to try and basically get these legal teams to help us. But it's a really big contribution to have the lawyers from Center for Food Safety. And
go ahead. I think we all feel just really honored to be a part of this work. And with that, I actually have to run. I got to go set up for the presentation, but I really appreciate your time, and I hope everybody joins us today at 6 p.m.
Yes, and I'm glad that you're in Hanama'ulu. There are many people who have worked in that area in industry, in the ag industry, for generations.
Awesome. All right, well, I look forward to chatting with them. Have a great day.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha.
So interesting, yes.
You know, so good that she would call in and give us the direct information. There's a lot of rhetoric and just a lot being said on all sides, but to have somebody who actually has some hard facts to call in and lay it down, that's great.
Yeah, so we're hearing about all those elements, and that's one of the nice things about Kauai Community Radio, and we will be having a fund drive coming up. We are able to bring these voices out. This is not the type of voice that would be really given airtime on most other commercial media. It's really a challenge for them to be able to get this position shared, and it was really nice hearing from our friends from Hawaii Island. I know that I often hear from the different islands how lucky they feel that Kauai is to have Kauai Community Radio. And so when we have this fun drive, and even before the fun drive, you can be an early bird. And if people go in and they invest with a donation, if they invest in having this community resource with a donation at www.kkcr.org, we have early bird specials. It's like a couple nights at, I should look, I think it's Hanalei Bay Resort. We have a hotel that is giving a couple nights out as a drawing from it, and there's all kinds of support that happens. But so KKCR needs your support, and we have Wave Riders that is another really great way to support the station. People can contribute. Dove's in here. Dove, is it $150 for a Wave Rider?
I think so.
He thinks so.
It says right on the promo.
We're okay. I'll play the promo in just a moment.
Do we have the same T-shirts as last time, Dove?
We always have a
Wave Rider mic right there.
Okay, I'll play the promo.
I'm not sure yet about the T-shirts.
Maybe new T-shirts.
But okay, I'm gonna play the promo for the Wave Rider right now.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming spring membership drive. For a donation of $150, a brief message about your business will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 11-day fundraiser. The fall membership drive begins Monday, October 5th, and continues through Thursday, October 15th. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. Wave Rider forms are available on kkcr.org or call 826-7774. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
All right. Mahalo for listening and mahalo for supporting.
So Felicia Sirt, the Community Emergency Response Team, is having a 24-hour basic training class. And these don't come up often. It's a great opportunity to get some training that will allow you to help your community in event of an emergency.
Can you give an example of like what they do? I took a CERT class before. It was pretty good.
Sure. I mean, it can be something, pretty basic. Like if we have tons of people streaming up from Hanalei, traffic control can stand out there and
and they do search and rescue elements and all different kinds of things.
Search and rescue, right. So in more severe events, you know, they could be getting people out of destroyed buildings. Everybody has advanced first aid, and there's information on how to triage people in the case of mass casualties of one, and there here's a lesson on fire suppression, sorts of things that you need to know to operate as a effective group to supplement the emergency response teams of fire department, the police, the medics. If they're overwhelmed, they call out the CERT.
Yeah. And you learn CPR and you learn all kinds of strategies, and they put teams together. Some people are really good at people with construction skills are actually very important in this. A lot of different skills, medical, everything. So they have the community. So when is the event?
It is Tuesdays and Thursdays starting September 29th. So that's coming up. And it's 5:30 to 9:30 in the evening at Hanalei Elementary School. So we have September 29th, October 1st, October 6th, 8th, 13th, and 15th.
So that is for the North Shore. Is there some for any other areas?
Right now, this class is just happening in Hanalei.
Okay. And so if somebody did want it in their community, do you know who they would contact?
Yes. You could contact John Cornell of the Kauai Fire Department, and you can email him at kfdcert@kauai.gov. So that's
Kauai Fire Department cert@kauai.gov.
Exactly. You can just give him an email there. There's a phone number also, 808-645-0661.
Well, that's great. Okay, well, a couple other good little fun reports. I went to Waipa's Blessing for their kitchen. Their kitchen opened, their commercial kitchen, and that's been many years of fundraising and grant writing, and it looks really, really nice. And what was really nice in that event that was last Friday is, you know, there was many people. There was people from Office of Hawaiian Affairs there. The mayor was there. Derek Kawakami was there. A number of our county council people. And the same with Kamehameha Schools, because Kamehameha Schools has the master lease on the land there. And I got a lot of encouragement out of it. It was great. Locally sourced organic food was what was provided there. A number of the different value-added food people that come to the farmers market in their area and at Waipa and different places, they showed their food, and these are the type of people. It's entrepreneurship that is being encouraged, and some of these different individuals get caught up in the last argument that we were just talking about with the pesticides and agriculture practices that aren't so easy on the land. But, you know, it was clear that they have support for and enjoyment of seeing a more natural practice, you know, come to a space where it can really flourish and do well.
Great. So every Thursday morning you're down there making poi, yeah?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Make poi, and that's at what's called a consumer-supported agriculture. And, you know, it goes out all around the island. It's mostly kupuna, and, you know, it's people order it, and it comes, and it's delivered. So it's delivered around the island, and I'm happy to know that we're still going to be cleaning it in the same area. We've got some big, more commercial grinders. Big Hobart that grinds it, but it will be you know, a bit more upscale how we're packaging it and grinding it, and not all of that is delivered yet.
So how can we consume more poi on this island? What's it going to take to shift us toward eating more like the Hawaiians did?
Well, all it takes is a little bit of a consciousness towards doing it. And that's a great question. And one of these shows that we're going to have coming up is really going to be about integrated food management plan that we, it's a network of nonprofits are working on. You know, a lot of times people become over-reliant on government, and we're not really waiting for them, though they aren't trying to trip us. I mean, the federal government does certainly feel like it is with their Food Safety Modernization Act that makes it near impossible. It's not designed for regenerative farming because you're not supposed to have plants and animals in the same environment, and that's how nature works. So it's a little tough with that. But we, you know, like this 75 acres in Kilauea, I'm really happy to see that making some progress. And there's different places where people can get land to farm for relatively inexpensive and to have a garden guided. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man. And I think that's our only underwriter right there. But we will hear about Mokihana Pest Control and then a little bit about our bylaws.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
Aloha, members of the Kekahu Foundation and KKCR. This October, the Kekahu Foundation Board of Directors, which oversees the management and operation of KKCR, will consider revisions to the Foundation's bylaws, which have not been updated since 2001. The proposed revisions would give more power to the Kekahu Foundation members to participate in meetings, elect and remove directors, and make or reject future changes to the bylaws. The Board welcomes your input. You can review and comment on the proposed revisions by going to the kkcr.org homepage, where you will find a link to the proposed changes and instructions on how to provide input, which is due by October 15th. Mahalo.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and our team member, Jonathan Jay, just came in here, and he's got a gift to share out.
Yeah, I won a ticket last week to the Mokihana Festival. There's a really great performance tonight, Under the Palms. It's hula, music, arts, and crafts, and that's at 6 p.m. at the Aston Aloha Beach Resort at the Wailua River mouth. But I can't go because I'm going to be at the Apollo Kauai meeting tonight about liquid natural gas with speakers Mina Marita and Jeff Michelina. I'm going to go there and record that. So because I can't be in two places at once, somebody who knows what moku the Wailua River is in the middle of, the first person who can call in at 826-7771 can go to the Under the Palms at Wailua tonight, and that's the Mokihana Festival. So, Felicia, have a great show, and let them know how much fun they can have.
Okay, and thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I got to split because I got to get there on time for it to start.
That sounds great, Jonathan.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So, we got a lot of things happening on in the country. So, it's amazing, really, when I look around at all the different elements that are happening. I looked at some of the national politics. We have, you know, we had this Republican debate a few nights ago, and I've kind of watched that, and I've been watching a handful of the other discussions that are underway. And so we'll talk about that. We've got a caller on the air right now. Aloha, you're on the air.
I gotta shut my phone off.
Okay, yeah, you want to turn your radio off.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So this is Scott. I was listening to Mr. Ray about the reef situation yesterday.
Okay, can you try and get your phone to be a little bit more clear? I heard you said this is Scott.
Yeah. Terry Riley was talking about the reef situation yesterday.
Was it Terry Lilly?
Yeah, that's what I meant, Terry Lilly.
Okay.
And it was fascinating, and is the way that you can get him on the air?
Is there any way I can get him on the air? Yes, I'm sure that there is.
Yeah, that would be great. I don't know if you heard his program, but it was just really, really, I think he's nailed the problem with the reefs here, so...
Well, there's a lot of challenges. I think he's particularly right now focused on the cell towers and then the floating antenna. Is that correct?
Yeah. The military thing, you know, basically gave him a heart attack. And I've experienced the same thing with a guy. There's an intense, felt like a heat wave came over me. So it's something to look into. It's big time, and I think it's like pollution, big ships, you know, the cruise ships, and runoff from the fertilizers. But I think he's got some information.
Well, I got to look into that more. I have tried to look into it. Normally, whenever I bring somebody in the studio, I actually go to a lot of work of. I go to the meetings, I research it, I try and really make sure that I can find, have you found any links? I haven't seen links to where the Navy says they're there.
What he had, he had a scientist that was a whole different mission, trying to figure out why all the fish are dying around the world, and he's studying these fertilizers for years and years and years, and they tap into the cell towers and the military, you know, the high, you know, the frequency things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right. It's the EMF or the low frequency, actually, I think, that is being emitted.
Yeah, and so he has a guy on, he's a scientist, and he broke it. It's so accurate. I mean, he has web pages and everything else like that. I've been searching it all day, and it's phenomenal. The amount of dead fish, burned fish, like the sharks that were just washed up, a week ago, something like that. But they're all burnt fins, and you know, Terry's, I've been in touch with Terry for even before I came to Kauai, and he's right on it, and. And the scientist he's working with, and he was on the air for close to an hour.
Okay, I know that it should come on to the KKCR audio archives. I looked for it today. It's not on yet because it was on yesterday, and I have been planning to listen to that and hear that and to do some research on those pieces because I have tried independently to find collaborative evidence that there are these floating antenna, and so I haven't been able to find it, but that does not mean that they don't exist.
Yeah,
it means I haven't been able to find that collaborative evidence.
So, how about about getting a CD of his talk yesterday? Is that possible? Because I as much as I said on my phone.
Okay, I will make sure to email you a copy of it coming off the KKCR website. That can be something that you, or if you can't do it that way, somebody here maybe can. I don't have the capacity to burn you a CD. They don't put it in the computers anymore. But
just send the email, and you have to listen to it yourself. I mean, it's gonna rock your world. I mean, it's really, really genuine.
Perfect. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the call.
Have a nice day. Bye.
Okay, you too.
So, Jonathan just asked me to repeat the numbers 826-7771. Anybody that would like to go to the Mokihana Festival event tonight, you've just got to let us know what Moku the Wailua River is in.
Okay, and I actually know that answer, but I'm here and I can't go there, so yes, it'll be a great...
You're disqualified,
I'm
Felicia.
Okay,
sorry.
I'm disqualified. So I am looking, and Scott had just called in, and so if somebody went to kkcr.org and went to audio archives, at the very top of it, it says Health Talk, and it says guests Terry Lilly and Stuart Stevenson. And so that is where, and all they'd have to do is click on that little arrow right there, or they could download the audio archive and they could hear the show. So I will listen to it tonight. I already had somebody call me just before I came to the show and said that was very, very interesting. And so I need to hear it. I need to look at it. And I'm always working hard. I've tried to go up to... There's a dam being built on Hanalei River. And so there's a lot of mud and silt that's going out on the reefs. Terry works very hard to help protect the reefs. He's extremely diligent, and he spends a lot of water time out there. That's the one thing, is he's in the water on a daily basis looking at it. And there's a dam going in. I think the Department of Land and Natural Resources is putting one up there, and I have been leaving messages and trying to go in and go see and look at it. What I try very hard to do when I bring things onto the show here is have as much as I can of accurate information, and then I have a lot of confidence. It's something that we go through, Jonathan, who was just in here, and why I've started really being saying what our mission statement is we get a lot of pushback for bringing up what people are concerned about. There's a lot of resistance and resentment from the people who are in place. But I do want to also acknowledge that, hey, you know, when we were looking at what's going on at Hyena State Park, the new management plan, we got the contractor on, and we got one of the people on the advisory committee. And our show on, I think it's October 5th, it's a Tuesday coming up, not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday after, I'll have from Parks and Recreation, Lenny Raposo. And then also, I don't remember the name, but the person from, it's somebody from the contractor that's looking at Hanalei Black Pot Park. So I try, and when I can, I work really hard, actually, to get the primary source so that we hear really straight from the horse's mouth what they're thinking about, what they're planning to do. I want to be working even more proactively. It takes a lot to gain confidence, to get the government to be telling us even before they pick these citizens advisory councils, so that people are hearing and learning and knowing that something is coming up. And, you know, I'm going to, like, give everybody a hard time here for a moment. People are busy, and they don't want to spend the time to sit there and look at all of this stuff. It's difficult. We have this general plan update. It says Kauai Kako, K-A-K-O-U. And for those of you who are still learning the language, Kako means everybody. And the general plan update, we've had Marie Williams from the planning department in here. She was in here at the same time as we had Kamuela Cobb Adams, who is the director of housing, come in. It's really, really important for people to surface and say what matters to them. Because without that input, then your needs aren't met. And so everything you just brought up, sir, the citizens emergency response team, that becomes part of the general plan. It's like, how do we make sure we're safe? And what Scott, the last caller, just called in is about these towers. We've had a lot of concern over cell towers. I was one of them. The smart meters, the EMF, those type of things. People need to show up and listen. Brad Rockwell, who is speaking tonight at Niumalu Beach Club, which is actually at now Willy Willy and not Niumalu, but it's called the Niumalu Canoe Club. Go there and listen to Brad, and there is question and answer sessions. And, you know, even on things like that still yet about the EMF from the smart meters, it's important to be asking and finding out. And it's when people do actually reach out. So Brad Rockwell's talking tonight, and he will be a good person to be able to ask some of these things. So with the general plan, people need to engage with this Hyena State Park management plan. We managed to get a 30-day extension. We had different people in the show, both the people who are supportive of it and the people who were concerned about it. And a lot of letters got written out. And I know my letter even said, you know, I asked for two more months, but they gave another month. So that deadline is going to be October 9th. And so when we get those kind of extensions, we need to really be engaged and be looking at it and making sure that it's what we want. I know Kalalau, there's, you know, a Facebook page on what's going on at Kalalau, and a lot of people are feeling like it's a little bit out of control out there. I see that, you know, some people are feeling bullied, other people are feeling like there's too many campers or this, that. And if there's an Akamai listener who wants to call in on the Kalalau challenge, I welcome that. You know, when we say we don't want government regulating, or we don't want the Department of Land and Natural Resources or their officers coming in and looking at things, well, we need to self-regulate. And so it doesn't always happen. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felice again. This is Scott.
Hi, Scott. Did you hear me say that?
I'm a retired beekeeper, okay?
Okay.
Bees in Washington and Oregon, California. So bees operate.
You're kind of breaking up. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Barely. Okay.
I have bad cell reception. So, bees, retired beekeeper, and bees operate at the same frequency as the cell towers.
Yes, and so do we, by the way. So
yeah,
do we.
I should be on my cell phone, but I have to. But, in the mainland, not on Kauai, they have these mites. They have them on Oahu, and I think that's Big Island.
Yeah, the Varroa mite. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's... they're not a problem when the bees are healthy.
Right. And we have a compromised immune system. And then,
right.
Yes.
And this is the same thing with the reef.
Yes.
They won't let the Jerry figured out, and this other guy you mentioned figured out that the little micro things that attach to the reef and grow the reef, they won't attach it to that electricity on the reef. They just don't attach.
Right. And they're
so the bees basically it's unbelievable. It's like they in Puget Sound when I go to the bee meetings, they're trying to figure out how to find a poison to kill these mites. But the problem is basically they leave their hive. It's not like foul brood or European foul brood or American foul brood where they just get slimy and slowly die. They leave the hive and they can't find their way home. They got a full hive of honey. They can't find their way home because their immune system
is damaged. And as we're speaking about this, my guess is you're in Princeville with an AT&T phone. So what happens when we don't allow the cell towers, which, you know, we need to work on because it's unhealthy for us. But
I'll get a hard line.
Your phone has got that challenge.
Yeah, I'll get a hard line. I have to go up the road. Actually, two blocks, walk up the block.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Bye. So, and Marshall's smiling at me. He's not particularly worried about the EMFs, but I did use my little meter and went over, and where you're living, you have right on your bedroom wall a bank of those smart meters, and you live in a cell tower area. So I thought, okay, well, this is pretty bad. And it was not too bad. It wasn't as bad as, say, being right next to your smartphone.
Right. It's not that I'm dismissive of it, Felicia, at all. I think it is a concern. I don't think we know enough about the EMFs, for sure. But I have to sleep there.
Right, and I'm not giving you a hard time. I know I had somebody was over my house, and I pulled it out, and we were like going, well, what, you know, and it was in the red, and I was trying to say that my house was pretty clean from that. And then so we pointed it at her purse, and it was her smartphone off, was still making it ping in the red.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I look at these things as at some point, you know, my joke is living is fatal. Like how, you know, where do we go with it? And it can just be a little bit overwhelming. I was starting to talk about national politics. I had thought to play one of Bernie Sanders. He spoke to Liberty University. It's a really good one to listen to because he's talking to a group that doesn't agree with him. He's talking to a big stadium, probably 9,000 or 10,000 people. And so if somebody was to Google Bernie Sanders at Liberty University, I really liked how he was speaking to issues of dealing with poverty and social justice in a way that actually reflects what is in this resolution before the county council. It's coming across all the country, you know, and it's something that's being looked at, and he is speaking to that. And in fact, somebody could say that that is somewhat of a socialist agenda. I happen to feel like, okay, we have welfare for the corporations when we see trillions of dollars, literally like $3 trillion went missing and unaccounted for in the defense budget. And that's a huge amount of money. You know, it's a phenomenal amount of money. And there are other missing areas, whether it's in HUD or in different pieces. So we have all this money just hemorrhaging out of the government. It's hard to take any of it very seriously. It feels like we have monopoly money, and it's just pushed one area or another. I was listening to the Bernie Sanders piece. I talked to one of my friends who is another programmer. He couldn't come in, but I wanted to give the Republican side of the argument kind of equal time, a little bit of equal share. Now, there are 11 contenders, I think, left. Have you paid attention? I know you're a little bit more aware on that.
Sure. Is it down to 11 already? I don't know.
Well, there was 11 people at that convention.
Oh, right. Yes, at the debate. So that was
the
adult table had 11 people, and then there were four more at the kids' table, that little debate they had beforehand.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting way of
putting
it.
So that's 15, and now we've lost Scott Walker, so we have 14 now.
Scott Walker, didn't we lose another one too a couple days ago?
Rick Perry. But he was before that debate.
Okay, all right. Well, I was sitting there trying to grab that, and it was I couldn't find really anything in there that I felt had substantial policy in it, though that is a lot about the way it was set up. And when you have that many candidates, there's not a lot of room, but it was a lot of jocular conversation, and I struggled to find anything meaningful. And I even went to front pages of the websites. I went to Ted Cruz's website, and it was still a little soundbite that was fear-based, and you know, an interaction between a pair of boots and a scorpion, and you know
What?
You know, it's looking down at a pair of boots, and there's a scorpion on the sand there, and it's talking about, you know, really, you know, it's saying we need to stamp it out before it's a problem. You know, it's like, it still wasn't policy. It was still theatrics. And what I did really like, I don't agree with everything Bernie Sanders says, but I agree with a lot of it. But what I really liked is even when he's speaking to people who he doesn't agree with, or who he presumes maybe wouldn't agree with him, he was able to keep it on policy, keep it constructive, and be really, really clear about how to have a compassionate government, yes, it does spread some wealth around, but it certainly does seem like we are spreading the wealth up to the top of the pile is the way that the system is going. And he had some really excellent, statistics. And I felt like, well, for me to paraphrase it, it was just easier to let him do that. But I did want to try and have a balance, and I didn't play his piece because I couldn't find something where I thought I could find a piece that really had a good policy piece on in reflection of it. And it kind of stuns me. It seems that Donald Trump is the front runner in all these Republican candidates, and when he's mostly, what I hear is espousing racism and sexism, and, you know, he's speaking to the lowest part of what I think people's frustrations are, that's what the identification is. It's have you followed it?
Sure. You know, I mean, that's, he comes from it. This is like the third presidential election cycle that he's made an appearance, and his core constituency, he made an appearance talking about being a birther, really, that President Obama is a Muslim and that he was born in Kenya. That was his big thing. And he can't let go of that now. That's a core piece of his support right there. So it's finally come up. And he is refusing to renounce that position, really. So we'll see where it goes from here. You know, people are saying, well, this is too much. He's getting such mainstream exposure, and when he finally shines a spotlight on some of his core beliefs, it's maybe not looking so good for him.
Well, when I look at the federal government, the United States of America, in all caps, is actually a corporation. And it is, in fact, the biggest corporation in the world. And so when we look at government structure, we're seeing the same trending. We're seeing our economics, the money is all going up to the top of the pile. And then in our politics, the power is going up to the top of the pile. I feel like it is a constant discussion of taking power away from the states, whether it's Democrat or Republican. Really, you know, if we have a candidate that says free child care and free college and free health care, can I get behind that? Sure. But that is still federal, and that is taking power away from the states. So what I can, you know, my jaded self, I get a little concerned that, okay, you know, it can sound really good, and then we lose a lot of authority at the lower level. What we're talking here in Hawaii is how we, the separate islands, aren't allowed to say what kind of crops and what type of pesticides and all that stuff is done on our islands. We have a city that is basically saying, oh, yeah, you know, you can do whatever you want. And it's the neighbor islands, right? So the most of Oahu is concentrated in a city. This problem is much more profound on the neighbor islands. And yet Oahu gets to make the call, gets to make the decisions of what happens with the neighbor islands. And so that is our localized challenge with that. But whether it's Democrat or Republican, it still seems like the main name of the game is going, concentrate the power up, concentrate the power up. We've had some people who are a little bit libertarian, and I think that was part of what's being suggested in this Boots and Scorpions, on Ted Cruz's website. We can see that there is a little bit of an effort to be pulling it away from so much going to the federal, but it mostly, that's not even part of the dialogue. It never even gets talked about. At least I don't feel like I hear it at really any profound level of where it becomes citizen empowerment. It's, you know, when you say, okay, we're going to take care of everybody, that's not the same thing as empowering everybody. It is still a relinquishing of sovereignty, personal sovereignty. So That's a little challenging for me.
Well, yes, and to empower people, they've got to be able to live a normal, decent life if they work full time. You know, people shouldn't have to work 60 hours a week and still struggle to feed their kids and not be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. So if people don't have those basic needs taken care of, it's hard to empower them in any other way.
That's correct. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. And our number, if you'd like to call in, is 826-7771. And we do have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. This is Jedi McRoberts, lead director of the Kauai Dispensary Project.
Oh, okay, great. Well, I'm glad that you're calling in. Dispensary, that means cannabis or marijuana dispensary?
Correct.
Okay, and we were just talking about states' rights, county rights, and so this would be...
A nice transition.
The state is saying we are going to allow for dispensaries of medical marijuana. So... tell us what's on your mind.
All right. So as of July 14th, Governor Ige has signed the dispensary bill, HB 321. That law allows for 8 dispensaries, 2 on Hawaii Island, 2 on Maui, 3 on Oahu, and 1 on the beautiful island of Kauai. So we have an organization called the Kauai Dispensary Project, consisting of local individuals who are vying for their license here on island.
So is it one group of individuals, or is there a bunch of different individuals vying for that license?
There are a bunch of individual groups at this moment vying for this particular license.
And so you are one of those individual groups?
Correct.
And which group are you?
We are the Kauai Dispensary Project.
Okay, and what is your vision?
Well, our vision is to keep it 100% locally owned and operated, and make sure that it stays within the community, as opposed to having outside influences dictate how the dispensaries run here on the island.
So when there's only one, where is it going to be? Is it going to be in Lihue, or where would it be?
That is up to the individual group. There are guidelines implemented by the Department of Health that state that it can't be within 750 feet of any schools, public housing, or daycare centers. But
like,
other than that,
kind of like liquor.
Correct. As long as you meet those requirements, it could be potentially anywhere on island.
So would you have a vision where you would like to put the one that you're considering?
Well, ideally, I think a central location would be best. The bill states that each licensee will actually be allowed to open up 2 retail locations. So you could have one, let's say, in Puhi and one in Kapa'a.
Right, or you could do something like Kapa'a and Kalaheo, so, you know, it's sort of equal distance or, you
Correct.
Know, something to
Correct.
That effect. And then would it also have cannabis oil? Could you have all of those things?
Absolutely. Right now the bill allows for cannabis flowers, cannabis oil, lozenges, pills, salves, pretty much anything except for edibles. Those are not included in the bill text at this moment.
Oh, I knew edibles.
Edibles, yeah. I think there's a lot of negative press coming out of states like Colorado and Washington.
Is it around controlling dosage?
Correct. You know, people consuming more than they should and having negative effects related to that.
So I've known you since you were a child. I've known you more then than now. What is your background at this point?
Okay, well, I've been a nurse now for 7 years. I've worked at a variety of different capacities on island, some in management, some in direct care. So, my history spans 7 years of dedicating my life to taking care of the sick and dying.
So do you work with hospice or something too?
I have in the past, yes. I've worked with the geriatric population. I've also worked with pediatric population, including kids with seizure disorders that have been beneficial or have been helped by something like the CBD oil.
And actually, our geriatric population at this point, most of them were pretty good weed users when they were young, right? So it is not a foreign thought to them. It's probably
absolutely
some of the biggest users anyway.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, with the new routes of administration, whether it be vaping it or the oils, it's actually safer now to consume it as opposed to, you know, inhaling some of the toxins and tars from conventional administration routes.
And what about where it's grown? Can it be grown here, or do you have to source it from somewhere else?
So, again, the bill states that all licensees must have vertical integration. And what that means is all plants and products must be produced by the dispensary itself. The actual production centers, each licensee will be allowed two different production centers. They cannot be attached to the retail locations. They have to be separate entities.
Indoors?
That is not clearly defined at this moment. The Department of Health is currently working on rules and regulations that they will release at the end of this year, which will clearly state how it has to be grown. But in the current bill text, it just says that it needs to be grown in secure, enclosed structure. Whether that means a warehouse, whether that means a greenhouse, is not clearly defined.
So whoever gets this is going to have a pretty big opportunity, and so they can't buy it from other growers on the island. They have to be every piece of it, but maybe it could be a big collaborative company that is working with different growers. I mean, I've never been in one of these shops. I haven't. I wanted to go see one. What kind of volume do they do? I mean, they probably would do pretty significant volume.
Yeah, so each production center will be allowed to grow up to 3,000 plants. So combined, you will be able to grow up to 6,000 plants. So you're talking moderate to large-scale agriculture at this level. So it's a pretty big production. And again, it's vertically integrated, so the dispensary itself will be in charge of growing all products itself.
And then they manufacture it. They grow the product, they make the oil, everything.
Correct.
And you have either the skill set or the people on your team have the skill set to do that?
Absolutely. So we're working with local individuals who have experience as well as professionals stateside who have experience in working in this industry.
So we had a caller who has a few questions for you.
Absolutely.
One is, how much is it going to take to get this up and running? What's it going to cost?
Okay. Well, currently, for the application process state that you have to have minimal $1.2 million in escrow to even be considered. The more feasible number for somewhere like Hawaii is in the $2 to $3 million range, and operations on Oahu are looking between $5 to $10 million to even start it up. So it's a huge investment.
And so your team has a number of participants in it?
Oh, we do, but we're still continuing to look for local accredited investors. Again, our focus is to keep it locally owned and operated.
And is there a website for people to find you?
Mm-hmm. You can find us on the web at www.HawaiiDispensaryProject.com. We also have links on Facebook, Twitter, and Mass Roots, which is kind of like the cannabis-centric Facebook app.
And so if people were interested in being a part of this organization, they would contact you?
Absolutely.
And so you're building capacity?
Exactly.
So a couple more questions from our caller. What are the taxes like on this?
Right now it's the common 4.166% GE tax. Mm-hmm. There will be no additional taxes for patients, which is nice.
Okay. And is the operation bonded?
Bonded, yes. Mm-hmm. Has to be. Not only is it bonded and has to be licensed and secured, but the security requirements are pretty in-depth for your retail and production centers.
And does it have to be all cash business?
It does have to be all cash business at this point.
And that's because of the federal regulation that marijuana is not a legal substance in the United States, so the banks can't buck that national law.
Exactly. Right now it is in the federal Schedule 1 status, meaning that if the banks were to participate, they would by law be trafficking. So at this point, it is all cash business. There are some credit unions that are popping up across the country that are cannabis specific. So there are avenues to get around that.
I hadn't thought of that. So if there is a cannabis specific credit union that is local to Kauai or to Hawaii, then they could manage the credit cards.
Credit card companies are staying far away from it. But as far as opening up a checking account, potentially they could. There are some requirements that must be met for the dispensary and the banks to work together. One being that the cash cannot touch an employee's hands within the dispensary. So what they have been doing is setting up basically reverse ATMs. So a consumer would come into the dispensary, select a product, and there would be an ATM like machine in the dispensary, and they could pay through it through the machine. And then that machine would be emptied out by a third party transfer agent and then deposited directly to the bank.
Okay. That's pretty interesting. So how many people are, how many entities have their name in for Kauai's position? I mean, to me, I think, when you only have one position open like that, it becomes ripe with almost racketeering going on. You know, it's probably pretty tough to get that position. That's just my instinct, is that they're going to give it to somebody who's got the gamut for the entire state.
So the law states that only one entity can own a dispensary per county. So you wouldn't have someone coming in and being able to have a dispensary, on Maui, Oahu, and Kauai. So it can only be one person per county.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They also have a couple laws, addendums in there to prevent major money from outside coming in. All dispensaries must have at least 51% ownership by a legal resident of Hawaii with a minimum of 5 years in Hawaii.
Okay. But not Kauai. It's in Hawaii.
Correct. So you technically could have someone from Oahu vying for the license over here.
Okay. And it sounds like it's pretty easy to set the price then, too, when there is only one organization. You know, sort of got a built-in monopoly.
It is at this moment. And I guess that is part of our mission, to make sure that the person who's doing it is doing it for the right reasons and not just for dollar signs.
Now, are you going to be on Jimmy's show, or are you going to be on Out of the Box on
I will be
Thursday?
On Out of the Box. Jimmy was gracious enough to dedicate the entire show.
Okay.
It's coming Thursday, so I'll be on from 4 to 6.
Okay. Well,
go into a little more in depth about the history of the industry itself and how it's going to affect Hawaii and the bill, the dispensary bill.
Well, thank you so much. So Thursday, people will be able to hear a lot more about that. So we'll have a more robust discussion on Thursday. And
absolutely.
A lot of good questions. And is there a phone number or anything that you want to give out, or would it just be the website for people to
you
go?
You can go to the website, or you can reach me on phone.
What's your phone number?
Okay. It's 808-651-1899.
1-899. And one of the reasons I asked that is I know when it became law, and even before it was going to become law, on each side of the island, you know, it wasn't just in this community up here on the North Shore, a lot of people were going, okay, they want that business. You know, people can smell that that's going to be a good business. And it sounds like you might be able to even put something almost together like a cooperative if you're trying to build a certain base that people can come in and come in with a certain amount of investment shares or something like that. And so it
Correct.
Might be something that it could be spread a little bit broadly, because I think you're going to need
Absolutely.
A number of contributors, and then you would want to, it might be ideal if it was a little bit entrepreneurial-based, like a cooperative, as opposed to a corporation that is concentrating all that wealth upward.
Exactly. I totally agree.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care.
Aloha. You too.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Jazz with John is going to be in at the top of the hour.
Felicia, I'm thinking about these tickets to Under the Palms at Wailua.
Oh, yeah, starts in 15 minutes.
Yeah, nobody has called in with the answer to our question about what moku the Wailua River is in. So I'm thinking maybe we should just go ahead and give them away. It's, you know, it's going to be a really nice thing, and the tickets are paid for, and it'd be easy enough.
I think it's
to
one ticket, right?
Is it one ticket?
Mm-hmm. One ticket. So 826-7771.
Somebody, next person that calls up, you have
that
a ticket.
That wants that ticket and can go. And what hotel is it at?
It is at the Aston Aloha Beach Hotel in Wailua at 6 p.m. So maybe somebody that lives nearby there. And it's you don't have to get the ticket from somewhere else. I'll tell you. Oh, here's a caller. Let's see.
Okay, we'll see if maybe that's that. And then one other thing that I wanted to bring up, and we'll see if the callers want something else, but I've been looking at this migrants and war refugee issue, and these people are coming out of Syria, and it's really a challenge. And so, you know, what I saw is there's almost 60 million people being displaced, and they're trying to figure out where they can go to. As I've seen pictures, where they are from is just absolutely decimated. And I saw information that said, how come they don't go to Saudi Arabia or these more wealthy places? And I guess the short answer on that is they can. The reason that they're not is that they're like a different sect of the faith. And Saudi Arabia is Wahhabi, and it's very strict, and with the burqas, and, you know, very, very strict version of that faith. And that's not really the life that is typical for Syria. And Marshall, is somebody waiting on the line?
No, but we have a winner. Somebody
oh, okay.
is going to the event tonight.
Okay.
And she actually did know the answer to our little riddle.
Which was Pune, yeah.
Pune, it is.
Pune, yay.
Yes.
Okay. Good. So I was talking about Syria, and I was talking about the refugees, because each time it's coming up a little bit, but we don't really do justice to that. And
right.
I saw that, you know, they're looking to it's really a pretty small amount. You gave me an NPR radio clip that I listened to, and they were looking to put more people, 15,000 Syrians in the United States.
No, more. They originally had said 10,000, and now they're saying 100,000 by 2017, 70,000 this year.
Okay.
So they've upped it significantly.
So I saw that they're, you know, emphasizing more in places where there is an existing Arabic population. In Honolulu, there is an organization there in Honolulu to settle people on Oahu, and that is the Pacific Gateway Center. And if people, you know, were interested in helping with that, their phone number is 851-7010. But only one in Hawaii, a lot in Florida, a lot in different places. Okay, he's smiling.
It's just a friend of ours who calls up sometime. He wanted the ticket, so he's never calling again.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Well, we only had one ticket, and Jonathan Jay was giving away the one that he had won, so but that was great. Jonathan is going to be at the Niumalu Canoe Club today, where they're having the discussion on liquid natural gas and different types of energy futures for Kauai. I would have liked to have been at that. My instinct is, you know, thumbs down on liquid natural gas, but because I don't have enough information, I feel like, okay, why go for another carbon piece? Do we have another caller?
We do not.
Oh, okay. Did they just called in?
And nobody there.
Okay. All right. So liquid natural gas. I'm looking at John, Jazz with John. He's doing a thumbs up. Put a mic on. He knows everything. No, he doesn't want to. He comes in. It's pretty funny because he's a very intelligent man. He has a really rich experience in life, and he always has something kind of good to say. And then the song's going on. I'm thinking he should have showed up a few minutes earlier and been able to share that mana'o. The music programmers get to sit there under the radar a little bit. Yeah. So did you look into the migrant stuff at all?
Yeah. Well, I've been following it. You know, the thing about resettling the refugees here, the people seeking asylum, is that there's this long screening process.
Like a 2-year process.
It could be, yeah. So even though they say, well, yeah, we're going to take in all these tens of thousands of people, and it's a trickle. They've only gotten 2,000 people in so far. Every individual person in the current political climate, they've got to do a background check, essentially, on every person, and it just takes forever. And then they don't just, you know, fly them in and dump them somewhere either. There's resettlement programs, so... there's a lot to be worked out. Where are they going to live? What are they going to do for a job? You know, it's a lot of work to resettle people, so it's a major effort. But
and it's a major impact. I think, you know, 25 years down, history is going to be really looking back at this time in what happened. It's the amount of people who have been impacted is on a par with what happened in World War II.
Yeah, and it's... being the comparison is being drawn now toward after the Vietnam War. We took in 200,000 people then, and people are saying, well, this is probably worse. But we had a different sort of involvement, let's say, in Vietnam. This is pretty unprecedented, and it's going to take a really concerted effort to help these people, and there really can be no doubt that they are genuinely fleeing a horrible situation.
Right, and I've seen pictures of the cities and you know, Damascus, and you know where they're coming from, and it is rubble. At least, you know, best I can tell from looking. I try and research all these different elements that whatever we talk about. It's really a lot of work to be looking at everything. But it looks like Germany and Greece and Turkey are beginning to shut their doors to these people. You know, there's just so many coming in, they can't manage it.
Right, they're getting backlash domestically, you know, politically. People just see so many coming in and then start to say, well, you know, we can't provide services for everyone. And
yeah, the Czech Republic, I'm seeing that, Austria, it's being overwhelmed. It's millions of people are displaced, not just from Syria, but, you know, a lot are coming from Syria. And when I have been in Europe, I haven't been there for maybe 6 years, but even then, it was striking the amount of people who had left the Mideast as it has been. You know, we've had the part of involvement that we've had, 14 years at least of war in that area, and so that is part of the cost of having this kind of war, is that people are having to resettle out of those areas. And so I don't mean to turn a blind eye to the suffering of other areas, as I typically am talking about a park reorganization or, you know, what to do with this bridge or that bridge. And okay, we got another caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha.
I just get one word to contribute to that so-called refugee crisis. It's called invasion. Look back at the Ottoman Empire. It's called invasion. That's all.
They are invading us, or we invaded them, or...
No, they're invading Europe.
They're invading Europe.
Why? And they want to invade here. Oh, yeah, America, rather. I hope they don't come to Kauai, but yeah, it's called invasion. It's called invasion.
Okay.
Let me
know.
Aloha. All right. So that was a final thought. I know that that is a thought that's shared by many in Europe, and that, you know, they'll go, well, we've got to close the door.
Penniless people carrying nothing isn't what I think of as invaders, but, you know, it depends how you look at it, I guess.
It depends upon how people look at it. But it is time for the County Council report, and we will be hearing from Jazz with John. We got a little bit of a light County Council report. It seems like there is the main event is in the morning. It probably some this is a committee day, and so... Yeah, and John, before we even listen to it, do you remember what the main thing is in the morning?
No, not
okay. I know that I'm going to be watching it online. You can always watch the county council do their work.
They only had two items.
Yeah, they only had two items on the agenda, but you can look at kauai.gov, and then you look at the agenda, and then it has an MP3, and you just click on it, and you can watch it live. And it really is important for us all to be paying attention. So, Jazz with John is next. Aloha, Marshall.
Aloha, Felicia.
And aloha, listeners. So here is the County Council report, and then Jazz with John. This is Felicia and Marshall from Kauai Soapbox signing out.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's the County Council report for the week of September 21st. There will be a brief council committee meeting Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here highlights from the agenda. The Public Works Parks and Recreation Committee has a request from Councilmember Hooser for the county engineer to provide an update on the status of the Kekaha landfill to include but not be limited to the plans to close and relocate the new landfill, development of a materials recovery facility, efforts to pursue other solid waste solutions, including new technologies, and anticipated timeline for each of these projects. The Budget and Finance Committee has on their agenda Bill 2596 to amend an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016 by revising the amounts estimated in the Solid Waste Fund and General Fund. This is for the Kauai Police Department abandoned derelict vehicle coordinator in the amount of $140,122. Public hearing was held on this on September 16th. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai.gov/webcast meetings. Till next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.